Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5, the game day 5 of practice in the books for the Titans. And unlike the Indianapolis Colts, knock on wood, the Titans have not had a significant injury to their starting quarterback and thus damaging their chances at winning a division. In fact, they are so damaging to Indianapolis' chances. The news that Carson Wentz is going to have foot surgery today and that his recovery process will be 5 to 12 weeks, that Jeff Saturday, Ian, if you could, Jeff Saturday, a longtime Colt, a star Colt, told SportsCenter today how much it hurts his core to hear this news about Carson Wentz, because Jeff Saturday knows Indianapolis can't compete with Jacob Eason as their starting quarterback. Here's what he said.
If you can listen closely, you'll hear my heart breaking, Sage. This hurts me. Oh, listen, you know I'm a Colts fan. Like, I don't hide it. I want them, I always want them to be successful. I'm always going to be a Colt, but this is pretty tough news. And again, I'm with Frank. You know, you hope that it's on the 5 weeks, but if it's a 12-week type injury, this really sets the Colts back. I mean, you think, honestly, in the first 5 weeks of the season, they played two NFC teams to open it up. Then they got the Titans, the Dolphins, and the Ravens. Those three games, you know, an in-division opponent and then two AFC playoff teams, like, you got to win. Like, those are games you got to win, right? Those are huge. They're impactful for the playoffs. That's where the Colts want to be. Obviously, they had an opportunity to beat the Bills last year in the playoffs. It didn't come to fruition. This team was really poised and kind of under the radar to make not only a playoff push, but maybe contend. And I think from their perspective, they thought they were the favorite in the AFC South without Carson Wentz. They are not in that conversation. So you're hoping you get him back sooner rather than later.
Oh, it breaks my heart as a Colt, because I love the Colts, and you know, but I'm going to be real. I don't think we can compete is basically what Jeff Saturday was saying. Fair?
Fair. And okay. Like, that just kind of feels logical.
Yes.
Our starting quarterback is hurt.
Well, but some teams have starting quarterbacks get hurt and then they still can win some games. The Colts have Jacob Eason. And I will say this, it's weird about putting expectations on your local teams, because anytime you say that the team can't win, everybody gets mad and they say you must hate the team. And then every time you say the team should win, for some reason, people get mad. But I don't foresee a scenario in which the Tennessee Titans, given the news today, even if Carson Wentz comes back in 5 weeks, which logic would tell you he's probably not, I do not foresee a situation in which the Tennessee Titans not winning the AFC South should be deemed whatsoever to be acceptable by any of us. I hate to say it, because everybody over there wants to focus on getting better for tomorrow. But guess what? You should win the AFC South. You won the AFC South last year with a just horrific defense. You drafted Caleb Farley in the first round. You're getting Christian Fulton back. You added Janoris Jenkins. You paid big money for Bud Dupree. You took DeNico Autry from the Colts. Jeffrey Simmons is entering year 3. Harold Landry, Rashawn Evans, Jayon Brown, all in contract years. You should be better on defense. Your offense that was really good last year added a Hall of Fame wide receiver. And your competition is a mess. Jacksonville's terrible and they have a college ball coach. Houston has one good player who doesn't want to be there and might end up in jail. And the Indianapolis Colts banked everything they've worked for on an off-injured quarterback who, surprise, surprise, got injured. And yet I feel, if I say today, like, there are no excuses, and let me just say no and underline it, and let me say excuses and underline that, there are no excuses not to win the AFC South this year. Now, I don't think that whether or not the Titans have a good season is determined as to whether or not they make the playoffs. I think it is determined by how far they go in the playoffs. What is their level of compete in the playoffs? What do they end up doing at the end? And how far from a Super Bowl are they? But yet, I feel like there's going to be a lot of fans out there that when they hear no excuses on losing the AFC South, people will get mad and say crazy things like, whoa, Jared, how dare you put that on the Titans? You don't know what's going to happen this season. We have to let it all play out. How could you possibly say? I'm just telling you, the expectation, given the rest of the division, which is a dumpster fire right now, the expectation is simple. Win the AFC South. Even with an injury to Tannehill, knock on wood, you should win the AFC South. Even with an injury to Derrick Henry, knock on wood, you should win the AFC South. I can't foresee a scenario in which the Titans, if healthy and not just with an unbelievable rash of injuries, don't win this division. You can't argue that the three teams that are also with you are improved or that you can count on them. So I don't want to hear it from Titan fans that are afraid to get their hopes up and are afraid to have their hearts broken. I don't want to hear from them today saying, don't tell us that we should expect to win the division. No, you should. Your team is the defending division champion. Your team is the most experienced team in the division. You have the best players at the most important positions in the division. You have the most established head coach who has won the most in his career as a player and a coach in the division. You should win the AFC South. What's that mean for Cleveland or Baltimore or Kansas City or Buffalo? I don't know. If you can't kick field goals, you can't beat those teams. If you can't get off the field on third down, you can't beat the Buffalo Bills or the Kansas City Chiefs. If you can't sack the quarterback, you're not going to get a matchup with Tampa Bay in the Super Bowl. But we're not talking about Tampa Bay. We're not talking about Buffalo, Kansas City, Baltimore, or Cleveland. We're talking about Jacksonville, Houston, and Indianapolis. And all three teams right now suck. So the real question is, what are you afraid of if you aren't willing to say the Titans are going to win the AFC South? Because I'm saying it today. The Titans are going to win the AFC South. It is August 2nd. Jeff Saturday knows it and was telling you that on SportsCenter. Everybody in Indianapolis is trying to pray that Wentz is back for the start of the season. And even if he is, the missed training camp time and the fact that he may not be very good will all affect him. Houston and Jacksonville aren't even trying to win the division. There is no excuse in 2021. There is no excuse. And I know people don't like having expectations put on them, but I'm doing it. I've never understood this, and I've been covering sports now for about a decade, but I have never understood how organizations can get really mad when you say they suck and also mad when you hold them to a standard that you expect them to excel at. I'm not expecting the Titans to go on the road and knock off the Kansas City Chiefs in Arrowhead in the AFC Championship game. But I am expecting that you can sneak by the Houston Texans. I don't think it's a lot to ask. Do you?
No.
Ian, do you?
No, probably not.
Okay.
And that was an expectation of mine whenever the Titans signed Buddy Dupree to a $60 million a year in a deal. And especially when they brought in Julio Jones. Because that was the Titans front office's way of saying, look, we are going for it, and it's expensive, and it's risky, but this is what we think it takes to win. And not just to win in the first round of the playoffs, but to make a big splash in the playoffs. So that was my expectation for the Titans, was winning the AFC South this 2-3 months ago. But now, especially given these circumstances, and I want to reiterate what I said before, there is absolutely nothing that has happened in the past 72 hours within the Titans' team, within their own organization, that has changed my mind. It is all of the external factors surrounding the Titans and their playoff implications that has affected my thought of this. The Titans are at the same level that they were. The Colts are way below where they were last week. So to think that the Titans' expectations are different, I think is very, very fair because the circumstances are different.
Even they have told you the expectations are higher. Jeffrey Simmons today was talking about the expectations and confidence that the team currently has.
It seems like there's a different air of confidence with you guys this year. Is that something you've noticed? And if so, where does that come from?
I think it's just that mindset that we have right now, you know, trying to be better than we were last year. You know, it start with, I think, the energy that we bring to the field. You know, everybody knowing their assignment, you know, applying their technique and fundamental to what they're doing, you know, to the their job. And, you know, it's just the swagger that we've been having, especially the last, 2 weeks. I mean, last week and coming to this week, you know, I just feel like the energy been real high. You know, the expectation is high this year. So I think the guys just, you know, buying into what the leader's saying, you know, leading off with Kevin Byer. You know, he just one of them guys that he's going to bring the energy at the time we hit the field, you know, whatever it may be. So I think it was just that thing right there, just bringing the energy, knowing what you're doing, you know, and just applying it to practice. So
I don't feel bad looking at Vrabel. And I like Vrabel. I don't feel bad looking at Vrabel saying, dude, you got to win the South this year. There is no way around it. You got to win the South. And this should not be a Sam Sloman field goal that wins it for you. You should have this thing wrapped up by December 12th. Like, you should win the South. I also love the new schedule where, again, the socialist government that is the NFL wants everybody to be the same so the best teams get the hardest schedule. Adding the 17th game, the Titans get a game at home against the New Orleans Saints, who, by the way, don't look on paper like they're going to be very good this year. You know who the Colts get? The Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Good luck to them. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Here's the question. So we'll get to your text and we'll get to your reaction on this. But here's my question, which is, if you're a Titan fan and you're afraid to commit that this team should win this division this year, no excuses, why? Why are you afraid to say it? I'm not afraid to say it. I've been a fan since day one. I went to the first game. They beat the Bengals 36-35 on an Al Del Greco field goal. They should win the AFC South. And there should be consequences if they don't. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, live from the Whole Selling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. We're also going to give away something in the next segment, and I think a lot of you will like it because I believe they are tickets to go see James Taylor. So be listening for your opportunity to win those as well. Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. Nashville SC fans, join ESPN 94.9 Monday, August 9th from 7 to 8 for NSC Backstage, featuring Nashville SC players and coaches. Watch the show online via 1025 The Game's Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. NSC Backstage brought to you by Camarena Tequila, the official tequila of Nashville SC.
I mean, of all the things with Nick Foles, and look, we've seen him at his absolute best, winning a Super Bowl, coming off the bench, an incredible story. I don't know if he's ever been better at anything than he was in that interview right there. That was a slalom through some very tricky topics, casually mentioning the history that Carson Wentz and I have together. Yes, it would be a very big deal for the Indianapolis Colts to bring in the quarterback who came off the bench and won a Super Bowl in place of Carson and then got traded the next offseason. Like, that would be, yes, they have a lot of history. Also, it was a very good explanation for why Frank Reich is a very good coach. As Foles mentioned, changed the offense completely before the playoffs. That said, they could do it. The Colts could do it. But everyone would have to be, including Carson Wentz, would have to be on board. Plus, there's a money, he's due a big salary. Plus, the draft pick. Clearly, Foles would be open to getting traded. But would the Colts do it? We'll see.
There you go. That was Ian Rappaport, NFL Network, earlier today, as it just looks like Indianapolis is willing to give it a shot. Like, they are willing to give it a crack and see if they can go out and add somebody, you know, to come in and help out. Nope, they're not interested. According to Chris Mortensen, quote, "The Colts are not trading for Foles, Minshew, or Mariota at this time. Carson Wentz begins rehabbing his foot after 2 weeks. He hasn't been ruled out for week one, but it's optimistic. If this relatively safe surgery and rehab gets complicated, then another veteran quarterback will be considered." So they're coming out and basically saying the Indianapolis Colts are telling Mort, hey, we're not going to make a move. We hope Carson can be available for week one, and then we'll go from there. I understand the idea, but if you're going to go after Minshew or Mariota or someone that doesn't know the system, you better get them in now because they better start learning. And I don't think in the NFL, I think people play Madden too much. So when they play Madden, it's like, oh, you just trade one guy to the next team, and then that guy automatically, this computer digital player, knows every play and fits in seamlessly. And I don't think the NFL works like that. I just simply do not think it works like that. I was thinking about this earlier today. Do we think Jacksonville is a bigger threat to the Titans in the South with this Carson Wentz news and with Indianapolis's reluctancy to embrace the fact that Carson Wentz is unreliable? Do we think Jacksonville, with the unknown of Trevor Lawrence and the unknown of Urban Meyer at the NFL level, do we think Jacksonville is a bigger threat to the Titans than the Colts? Because I still have a hard time getting on board the Jacksonville bandwagon. Not just the Jacksonville bandwagon for down the road, which I have a hard enough time getting on board of too, even though they got Trevor Lawrence, but definitely can't get on the Jacksonville bandwagon for this year.
I'm not quite there. I don't doubt that Trevor Lawrence can find some success in the league. I'm not sold on Urban Meyer. I'm not sold on this Jacksonville Jaguars team. I think that everything is still so new and so fresh for the Jaguars to be a legitimate threat. And, I mean, we've heard Carson Wentz's timeline. It is 5 to 12 weeks. That means he could still come back in either week one or in the middle of the season. And he very well could escape injury for the rest of the season. There are still a lot of unknowns for Carson Wentz. So I'm not going to completely throw Indianapolis to the side, to the trash, and say, okay, they no longer matter anymore. Jacksonville's the next threat.
See, I do think they no longer matter anymore, but I don't say that. It's all relative to Jacksonville. I'm not worried about Indianapolis this year. You should not be worried about Indianapolis this year. They've got one great player at a skill position, and it's DeForest Buckner, the defensive tackle. Now, Jonathan Taylor, the running back, might be a great player down the road. He might be Derrick Henry, but he's not yet. And if you've got no threat to pass the ball, as we saw with Derrick Henry when Mariota was the quarterback at times, it's really hard to get that big guy going. So they've got one good skill position guy. You throw Leonard in there, the middle linebacker, but middle linebacker is not a premium position anymore in the NFL. I am throwing Indy away. The question is, has Jacksonville passed Indy? Because we at least look at Jacksonville and we see a quarterback that probably scares us a little bit.
I'm not there yet.
I'm not either. I mean, I think Urban's the problem in Jacksonville. Urban will have to win before I will believe that Urban can win.
Mm-hmm.
And I, for some reason, because this is like a college football area of the country, people here are convinced that Urban's going to win because Urban won in college. And I think Urban is so far. I think Urban is the wrong kind of guy. I had a buddy that played against the Sounds this weekend, played in the major leagues for a while. He and I went to lunch, and we were literally talking about the difference between college coaches and pro coaches. And this is in baseball. But we were talking about the difference between college coaches and pro coaches. He's like, look, college coaches are just too far up these guys' rear ends too often. I mean, that's, you just can't do that in the pros. I mean, these guys are making more money than you. They have more job security than you. They can get better endorsements than you. People want to, you know, have them on their team more than they want you. Like, you know, if you look at the Yankees, for example, Matt, I think his name's Matt Barker, Matt Banker, Matt, something like that. He's the pitching coach. He's never pitched in the major leagues before. Not one inning. Now, he knows how to work these cameras and analytics and all that stuff. But Garrett Cole makes $300 million.
Mm-hmm.
So if the issue is Matt Barker or Matt Banker or Matt whatever the hell the guy's name is, or Garrett Cole, the Yankees are going to get rid of the pitching coach before they get rid of Garrett Cole. That's just the reality. And I think that that's kind of where Jacksonville is with Urban.
Matt Blake.
Matt Blake, excuse me. Matt Blake is their pitching coach. I mean, this division should be won. I mean, there's no way around it. And if the Titans lose the division this year, I think somebody should be fired. And I don't know who, and I don't know at what level, because I won't know why they lost it. But I do think if they lose the division this year, that somebody should be fired. We should be more worried about Baltimore and Cleveland and Kansas City and Buffalo than we are Indianapolis, Houston, or Jacksonville. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. What's in there, Caroline?
One texter texts in and says, are there really people who are afraid to say the Titans should win the division? I find the opposite. People are saying they should. No excuses. That's different from believing they will, though.
Well, you manage the text line. So do you think people are afraid to say that the Titans should win the division?
I really honestly have not gotten a vibe. We've gotten a lot of input from Colts fans who very much so are not willing to say that the Titans can slide in and win the division. But I would say overall, not just today, but just the overall sentiment from Titans fans is that they absolutely should. Not just that they should, but that they will.
So the other teams, I saw this on SportsCenter today, where they had the highest odds to win the division. Tampa Bay has the highest odds at like minus 300.
Which Kansas I think is City, fair.
Kansas City's like minus 270. Buffalo, Green Bay, Tennessee. You ask any fan in any of those four cities ahead of the Titans, and without a shadow of a doubt, they expect to win that division. Buffalo, I think it's probably a little bit more complicated because Miami came on strong last year, and let's not count out Belichick. But I don't think there's a Packer fan out there, and the Packer fans don't even like Aaron Rodgers anymore. But I don't think there's a Packer fan out there who thinks there's a legitimate chance the Chicago Bears are going to win the division this year, or the Minnesota Vikings, or even the Detroit Lions that are doing up-downs at practice like it's 1950 and it's Remember the Titans all over again. I mean, there's not a single Kansas City fan that doesn't expect it. I keep going back to the Patriots for all those years that they won division title after division title. I believe New England, and you have to go back and look it up, but I believe New England from 2003 until 2019. So that's what, 16, 17 years? I think they won the division every single year except for 2008, the year that Brady tore up his knee. Every other year, they won the division. Those people don't care about winning a division. Those people are, I mean, I lived up there. I worked up there. All the talk up there was about Indianapolis and Peyton Manning or Denver and Manning or Baltimore or, you know, who you could see in Foxborough in an AFC title game. That's what they cared about. And here, because the Titans have never had those kind of players and have never been that dominant, I don't think there's ever been talk about the division being a sure thing. Even the best Titans team ever, the 2000 Titans that won the division 13-3, best record in the league, even that Titans team had to win it on the last game of the season, a Monday night football game on Christmas Day against Dallas. It wasn't handed to them because the Ravens were right behind them, and the Ravens ultimately ended up winning. The Ravens ended up winning the Super Bowl that year. Even when the Titans were good and won the division in 08 and had the best record in the NFL, Peyton Manning and Indianapolis were behind them, so you had to fear it. But this, I mean, this is trash. This is trash. Indy with no Carson Wentz, with Jacob Eason at quarterback, trash. Houston, trash. Jacksonville with a college quarterback and a college coach, trash. I just don't get it. What else we got on the text line?
One texter texts in to the text line and says the Titans will win the division. They have to, even if Carson Wentz plays. It's not close.
So here's the other thing about the Wentz stuff is, have you ever seen a quarterback that has gotten more love for doing less than Carson Wentz?
Maybe like a Kirk Cousins or a Matt Ryan.
But see, everybody thinks that Kirk Cousins sucks, and Matt Ryan's won the league MVP and been to a Super Bowl.
Then yeah, no. Carson Wentz, especially this offseason, and I don't know, it's because I paid more attention to it now that I'm covering the Titans, but I feel like every single thing I hear about Carson Wentz is just praise after praise after praise, and I don't understand why or from what.
There's all these assumptions that are made about Carson Wentz. Like, you know, if Carson Wentz can stay healthy, then Carson Wentz, and he finds his 2017 form, I think you look at Indianapolis and they have the...
If
he stays healthy, 2 days of camp, surgery, 5 to 12 weeks. And I don't know about you guys, like, am I crazy for looking at this and thinking that the 5 to 12 weeks is kind of conservative on a foot surgery?
5 weeks sounds very short. And especially when Frank Reich said, we'll evaluate after 2 weeks post-op. 2 weeks? There's still 10 weeks left in that potential window. 2 weeks you'll evaluate. That's the scars are fresh there.
Dylan is up next here on the program. Thank you for calling the show. Go ahead, Dylan.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I'm with you, Jared, about the Titans in the division. Just look around the division. You got Houston. Who knows what's going on with Deshaun Watson? Completely messed up organization. Traded Hopkins for David Johnson, of all people. It's a sideshow in Jacksonville. You got Tim Tebow running around and Urban Meyer and, you know, Trevor Lawrence, who, you know, wish him luck, but he's a rookie. And then I thought the Titans should win even if Carson Wentz was the quarterback. Hell, they may even have a better shot now that he's out. But, I mean, if the Titans do not win the division this year, it would be an absolute massive failure, and there would be no excuse for it. Well, I mean, I'm looking at the defense. I'm sure Coach Vrabel is going to throw Shane Bowen under the bus somehow if that happens. But I don't know. I agree, though, that somebody would have to get fired. There would be no excuse. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate your call. I mean, I think a coordinator has to go. You know, if you do that and you don't do it, I think a coordinator has to go. Somebody's got to go. I mean, you cannot lose this division. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Five takeaways from practice today. Caleb Farley got on the field. Julio Jones left the field. Perhaps Tannehill, not as perfect as everybody wants him to be. We'll have the five takeaways from training camp coming up next. And let's give something away. I'm just going to go ahead and do it. You okay with that?
I would love that.
All right, let's give something away. Let's give some James Taylor tickets away. Be caller 5 right now at 615-737-1025. You'll win a pair of tickets to see James Taylor at Bridgestone Arena on Monday, August 16th. Good luck to you. Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 1025 The Game. Stillman & Company, boy, practice was wild today. Caleb Farley made his appearance. Julio Jones left the field. So we've got our top five takeaways from Titans practice today. And, of course, we start at the top with number one.
Which number one?
There we go. Number one. Everybody wants to talk about Caleb Farley and his return to the field, or I guess his first time on the practice field. He was activated this morning. He was out there in some warm-up drills. And that was about it. Farley didn't do much. I will say this, though. Farley was, you know, working on his technique. They did one drill where the wide receivers would go up against the DBs, and they didn't throw a ball, but they would just cover them. And Farley got turned around twice by Cody Hollister. And at one point, he was taken off to the side by Julio Jones, who kind of worked with him a little bit. But Farley didn't do much today. I mean, I was hoping Farley'd get out there in some 11-on-11s or some 7-on-7s, and we could really see Farley play, but I think it's going to be a little bit of time before they bring him in there. That being said, though, don't get discouraged, because Christian Fulton has been playing really well at training camp, and here's the one thing, though, I can't get a judgment on. Fulton either makes the best play on the field or the worst play on the field. And it's like he's a very boomer bust guy. Now, we've been told Jackrabbit Jenkins is that way too. And just very boomer bust. Remember Malcolm Butler. And it looks like that's what Fulton is. Today, Fulton had an interception of Ryan Tannehill where he jumped the route on A.J. Brown, caught it, and ran. And honestly, may have scored a touchdown if it was a real game. But he also had two other chances to intercept Tannehill today and dropped both of them. And I look at that and I'm like, hey, if the ball's going to hit you in the hands, you have to come up with it and you have to make the grab. Vrabel after practice today, though, on what Christian Fulton has been bringing.
You spoke highly of Christian Fulton before practice started, just about what he's done in the offseason. Over the last few days, what have you seen from him to kind of, I guess, you know, further his elevation as far as what he's doing?
It probably just has to be a little bit more consistent, you know, so showed up today, you know, but going to continue to, you know, make sure that the effort that he put into the offseason and the spring that he had, you know, continues to show up, you know, out here on the practice field and just be more consistent and continue, you know, those corner, nobody runs more than the DBs, right? Receivers are going to rotate. There's going to be some guys, but these guys log a lot of miles, you know, high speed miles. And so you have to be in shape and condition, you know, to be able to do that. So that's something that we'll continue to concentrate on.
Sounds to me like Vrabel wants Fulton to get in a little bit better shape. And when he says, hey, he wants him to be more consistent, I think that means catch the interceptions when they're thrown to you, which Fulton did once, but didn't twice. That takes us to number two.
Number two.
Julio Jones left the practice field today. I got excited. They were doing team periods, 11 on 11. Julio Jones is out there. I'm feeling really good to get to see Julio Jones. Tannehill hit him with a strike. And then all of a sudden, Tannehill throws a just perfectly thrown ball for Julio Jones, who, it's hard to say this with Julio Jones, who's going to the Hall of Fame. But you know that feeling when someone throws you something and it's one hand in the other, and then you drop it? That happened to Julio. And so everybody's in this room, Julio dropped it. And then Julio got up very awkwardly and very gingerly. And Julio limped his way off to the other sideline, the defensive sideline, as opposed to the one that was further away, the offensive sideline. And Julio worked it out, you know, stretched over a little bit, talking to the trainer, you know, making sure he was okay. And then Julio went inside for the rest of the day. And I'd be concerned about Julio, but Vrabel was asked if Julio was okay earlier today. And Julio said, yeah, or Vrabel said, yeah, he's fine. Paraphrasing what he said, but that's the gist of what he said. Which makes me wonder if Julio's bobble and drop was really the cause for the injury or the limp and not an actual injury with Julio. Now, I'm a little worried because Julio does get injured and because Julio is a little bit older and because Julio never practices. So when Julio does practice and he comes up limping, like, should I be concerned? But until I learn otherwise, just off of what I saw, I'm going to guess it was probably a little bit of loser's cramp today as to why Julio Jones gingerly walked off to the sideline and then later into the training room.
Number three.
So this is bothering me, and I don't know how much it should. And that is Ryan Tannehill is turning the football over. So today, Ryan Tannehill had an interception. I told you that Christian Fulton picked off. Tannehill had a ball that should have been picked off, and it wasn't. And he came back over to the sidelines and was just ripping, you know, or I shouldn't say ripping, but he was very upset. And as I look through my notes from today's practice, he overshot Julio Jones on one that could have been a touchdown. He had some interceptions over the weekend. He had a pick that I just thought wasn't very good. Now, Kaiser's throwing interceptions, but that's okay because we expect Kaiser to throw interceptions, and we don't expect Kaiser to make much of a difference. Tannehill, though, throwing interceptions, I'm not a huge fan of. Vrabel was asked about the interceptions today. Here's what he said.
Not asking for a percentage, but just your feel for how much of that is good play versus bad decision. And I know a couple practices ago you were unhappy with the practice because you felt like you were giving away a lot of opportunities out there.
Well, certainly with the quarterback center exchange, I think the interceptions, you know, there were times today that I felt like we made a really nice play, and then I felt like, you know, maybe on the pressure, you know, I mean, like, we got to throw that ball away. We're just, you know, I mean, it's like they blitzed us, and, you know, that ball's probably just got to be, you know, dirted or thrown away. And I think that's probably, you know, when you throw out there late, that's a recipe for disaster.
So the turnovers, at least maybe it's something to watch for. The one thing I will say about practice is Ryan Tannehill over the last 2 years has been one of the most efficient quarterbacks in the NFL. I'm not going to get too worried about it yet. I'm probably not going to get too worried about it in general, but I'm not going to get too worried about it at this point because Ryan Tannehill has demonstrated in game-like conditions that he's not going to throw interceptions. And honestly, some of the guys that he's playing with at certain times are not guys I expect him to be playing with in a game. I mean, I think the wide receiver position is pretty much done as far as who's going to make the team or who isn't. I think there's one or two spots that are up for grabs, and he's got guys out there that I think are probably going to be practice squad guys. So I think that's at least worth looking at.
Number four.
Boy, the Titans had an off day yesterday, and they were buzzing today. You know, early on, I think a lot of people were excited to be there because of the Caleb Farley news, but Vrabel ran them out there 11 on 11, 7 on 7, 11 on 11. I mean, they were really getting after it today. Tomorrow they put the pads on, but they were really getting after it today, and Mike Vrabel liked the high energy that he saw.
Probably a day off. I don't know. You know, maybe a day off and they get, you know, some rest and they, you know, come back maybe the red zone, trying to just, you know, be smart and also use, you know, these reps to get us down there in the red zone. Just seeing where guys are coming off of a break and a day off, you know, trying to shorten the distance. And I think it, you know, I think we accomplished a lot just from the speed of it and what it looked like. And like you mentioned, the energy. So, you know, we'll have to keep that up going forward here and being able to compete and take care of each other. And I have a lot of energy when pads go on tomorrow.
So there you go. Tomorrow the pads will go on. We will see that. And again, the energy so far at practice, there is an aura of confidence that the Titans have at practice right now that has continued even when they haven't practiced well, but has continued at least so far for 5 days. We'll see, you know, coming up on a week of full practice if that maybe rubs off at some point, but it does feel like there's a lot of energy and confidence at camp.
Number five.
And I have to make this my fifth takeaway. Mike Vrabel today, even though he's worried about his team, was alerted to the Carson Wentz news that Wentz is out for the next 5 to 12 weeks. And Ian, if you could, I had to ask Vrabel because I do wonder what Vrabel thinks when he looks at his division and he sees Houston and he sees Jacksonville and now 5 to 12 weeks for Carson Wentz. And here was Mike Vrabel's reaction.
Carson Wentz, it was announced, going to have foot surgery, out for the next 5 to 12 weeks.
5 to 12.
They
I know.
Table,
5 to 12.
You guys play
like
them in 9 weeks.
Of being right.
You guys play them in 9 weeks. How much do you kind of keep an eye
well,
on?
Well,
that
falls right in the middle of it, doesn't it? I don't know. I mean, they're going to have whatever they're going to do. Got a lot of respect for Frank and his football team and that organization. We'll figure that out when it comes, whenever that happens. But we got a lot of work to put in, before we get there.
So Vrabel tells you what he thinks of the timelines. 615-737-1025. We'll get your reaction on that. Plus Caroline's full slate of betting tonight. Stillman and Company were delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESP at 1025 The Game. So I lost gambling last week to Caroline in large part because the Israeli baseball team could not get it done for me against Team USA. But
you were very
this.
High on the Israeli baseball team.
I was. Let me say this, though. I mean, I cut a spot for FanDuel in which I was asked to give some teams that I thought, you know, were going to perform well in the Olympics, and I put U.S. women's soccer as one, U.S. baseball as another.
Yikes.
And, I mean, what the hell happened to the women's soccer team?
That was the first time since 2001 that the U.S. women's national team has lost to Canada. Megan Rapinoe said, I don't think we've ever lost to Canada. And she has ever lost to Canada, and she's right. Like, what the heck happened? That team has so much talent.
So I like Megan Rapinoe. I one time did lunches in khakis with Megan Rapinoe in a bar in Dallas, Texas. I like her.
You did what?
I did lunges in khakis in a bar with Megan Rapinoe.
Okay, that sounds like a Mad Lib.
I mean, it happened. I actually...
Jared Stillman doing lunges in khakis.
So this is a story. This was a couple of years ago before it was known that her and Sue Bird were together.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at Dallas, the women's Final Four. I was at Louisville as a women's basketball manager, Connecticut, big rivals, and we play each other in the national championship game my freshman year. And so you become good friends with everybody. And there was a UConn party, and a buddy of mine, we left the UConn party, and I got an Uber, and I was like, I got, you know, whatever. So all of a sudden, Sue Bird and her friend and some other people show up in this Uber, and we end up hanging out in Dallas. So the next night, we're all hanging out, and Megan Rapinoe's there. And I know who Megan Rapinoe is, but I don't. And I'm like, who is this? And so I'm with one of Sue Bird's friends and Megan Rapinoe, unbeknownst to me who exactly it was, and somebody came up to us and told Megan Rapinoe, hey, I just think it is so awesome that you didn't stand for the national anthem. And I'm like, I know who you are. But so anywho, I was wearing these khakis that I bought at TJ Maxx, and they were just so comfortable, most comfortable pair of khakis I've ever worn.
Maxinista.
And I was telling everybody about how comfortable these khakis were. I'm like, they are so comfortable. And Megan and Rapinoe and I were talking about it. I'm like, I could literally do lunges in them. She's like, I dare you to. I'm like, fine. Start doing some lunges in khakis. And then I realized that those two were together. And I was like, oh, okay, sweet, cool. But I was like, oh, I can't tell this story on the radio because something like that gets out. Everybody will get mad. Now, you know,
now
the story's out
knows.
There. And, you know, I'm not spilling anybody's secrets.
They're the it couple now.
Time for Caroline's.
Get in on the action. Put the money on the mahogany. What's on tap on the sports books? It's time to break it all down with Caroline's. Here on Stillman & Company.
On ESPN.
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Mets, Marlins tonight. Give me the Mets on the money line, minus 140. Tyler McGill is on the mound for the Mets. He's 1-0 with a 2.04 ERA. Jesus Luzardo, lefty, is the projected starter for the Marlins.
He's former two. Nashville Sound.
Yes, he is. 2-4 with a 6.87 in six starts. So the Marlins were just swept over the weekend by the Yankees. The Marlins are 6-14 in about a month. The Marlins have scored four runs with 16 hits in their three-game series against the Yankees. The Marlins are on a down trend. Give me the Mets, minus 140 in the money line.
Mets on the money line as well. The Marlins tore it down at the trade deadline. They're just not very good.
Phillies, Nats. Give me the Phillies on the money line, minus 132. They have lefty Ranger Suarez on the mound. He's 5-3 with a 1.12 ERA. Has never made a starting appearance so far this season. He has not made a starting appearance since 2018. Josiah Gray is on the mound for the Nationals, who they acquired from the Dodgers in the Max Scherzer trade. He made his first major league start on July 25th. He's a converted shortstop. He's only been pitching full-time for a few years. He was called up from the minor leagues after just 198 minor league innings from 2018 to 2021. Give me a little bit more experience, not a ton, but a little bit more experience on the mound with the Phillies.
So I'm going to go with the Nationals here. I'm going to take Nationals +1.5 here, and I'm going to do it because I look at the lineup that the Nationals are going to put out there, and there's a lot of guys that are major league players, like Victor Robles, Juan Soto, Josh Bell, Carter Kieboom. So, you know, they get the prospect from the Dodgers in the trade. They're going to let him get out there. Maybe he's a little too young, but I think the Nats are going to get it done. Plus, I'm getting 1.5, and I don't trust the Phillies right now, so give me the Nats +1.5.
Okay. Spain, USA basketball tomorrow before our show, so that should wrap up before we start at 2, but give me Spain +12. I think USA gets the win. I mean, KD has become the highest scoring player in U.S. men's Olympic history. Double digits scoring in each of his three games. Jason Tatum also not too far behind him. He had a game high 27 points against the Czech Republic. But Spain is not bad. Spain had a double digit victory over Japan, and they just barely didn't make it into the winner's bracket against Slovenia, losing only 95-87. So I think Spain's going to give them a tough time. 12 is a big spread. So give me Spain +12.
I'm going to take USA -12. Give me the -12. I actually, shockingly, feel kind of comfortable about it. I'm going to take the Dominican Republic tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. I'm going to take the Dominican Republic over the Israelis in the knockout stage. You remember I bet against the Dominican Republic at 1, but I'm going to go ahead and take the Dominican on the money line against the Israelis.
Well, give me the Israelis on the money line.
There you go. You're going to get the Dominicans knocked out at the hands of the Israelis. That's it for us. Preds Insiders next. We'll see you tomorrow, too.